I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freud, and this is The Next Page. Hey, Marissa, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
I am terrific. That's, you know, as we've said for the last several weeks, that is my new standard comeback is going to be I am terrific, because we know attitude is a choice.
Yep. And you're back and from your time in Virginia.
I'm back from a time in Virginia, and as I look out the window, so I'm back home in my studio slash office at home, and I'm looking up at the sky, and it's blue, it isn't gray, it isn't raining.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful day out there today.
It is.
And we have, you know, so we do have wonderful days in Syracuse, but that stretch of rain that we had, we really did need.
Mm-hmm.
Because my lawn looks terrible.
We wouldn't appreciate days like this if we didn't have rain. So
That's right. And, you know, for our listeners, because they know that we were recording this weeks in advance, but this is literally like right before your due date.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we have to make sure that we get right on with this podcast because you may go into labor while we're talking, right?
Let's hope not, but it could happen.
Let's hope. We'll hope not. Because actually, we have to record two today, so we're going to hope that does not occur.
Yes. So we'll go ahead and jump right in to today's topic, which was entitled, Are You Majoring on the Minors?
Yes.
So tell us where you got this idea.
Well, actually, I heard about that phrase listening to a video blog, I guess we call them vlogs, about parenting. And right away, my mind went back to the week of the 4th of July. Our listeners know that two of my grandkids came from Ohio to stay with us. And apparently, I have this like habit of nitpicking on table manners. And I never realized that this was some unusual thing that I have trouble letting go of. But my wife was like, honey, it's okay. Honey, it's okay. And I'm thinking, no, they don't need to eat or to chew with their mouth open. They don't need to talk when they have food in their mouths. They don't need to have their elbows on the table. This is called proper table etiquette. And you need to know. You need to have manners. You need to, you know, follow all of those things. Well, apparently, I have issues with that. And it got so bad that my wife actually had said to me, you know, you probably don't remember this, but when the kids were little, I used to even think about feeding them before you came home from work.
Wow.
Yeah. So I never realized that I was really that bad.
And we'll remind our listeners that your grandchildren that we're visiting are 4 and 6 years old.
Yes, they are. So Silas and Lily are 6 and 4. And really, they're great kids, and they were really well behaved, and they really didn't have horrible table manners. But apparently, I was majoring on the minors, and it's not that we don't want our kids to have good table manners, but I never was talking about the principles behind it. I never told them why I thought it was important for them to have good table manners. I didn't, you know, say things like, you know, this really, it's not nice to have to look into somebody's mouth while they're chewing, you know, or that, you know, someday when you get older and you go to a restaurant with your mom and dad, this is really going to be important. None of that. It was just like, you know, Silas, don't forget, you shouldn't be talking with food in your mouth. And, you know, Lily, turn around, face the table. And all of a sudden, I kind of went back to this thing when my kids were little, and I felt really bad that I was harping on them like that, on my grandkids that way. We do that as leaders, as bosses. And I remembered a story, and I had shared it with you before we started recording. It was actually something that Doug Marone, the former SU coach, and I'm not even sure where he's coaching right now, but when he first came to Syracuse, he came to a President's Council event to talk about leadership. And he said, one of the things you need to learn is what are the major annoyances that your boss might have. What are those things your boss is going to nitpick on that'll push him or her over the edge? And apparently, when he was with the New Orleans Saints, it was walking around with a coffee cup without a lid on it. And it was that simple. He says, all I had to realize was keep a lid on your cup and the owner's going to be happy. Well, apparently they had new carpeting put in, and that's why the boss was so anal about coffee cups without lids.
But and I there's thought, nothing wrong with wanting to take care of your things and right. be careful on the new carpet, but that doesn't seem like that was explained. It was about the coffee specifically, because there's a lot of things that can happen right. to carpet to burn sure. it, not just coffee. Sure.
Right. But it was his pet peeve.
Right.
And I'm thinking there's something wrong when if we as leaders have to make sure that our teams know what our pet peeve is.
Mm-hmm.
Because clearly we're majoring on a minor then. You know, so the principles that probably the owner should have been trying to get across to his staff was, I value my office. I value the investment we put in carpeting and furniture and things. And, you know, you and I talked about it. You mm-hmm. could have stuff on your shoes, and especially in central New York, you know, mm-hmm. you could be walking in from outside in the wintertime with mud and salt on your shoes. You know, well, just getting him to keep the coffee off the carpet doesn't mean that, or a soda can, you know, or
pizza.
Or, you know, we've got some really pizza. Yeah, we've mm-hmm. got really nice furniture in our conference room at Macne, and if people come in, you know, our members are allowed to use our office space. But if somebody brings a pizza box and sets it on top of a stickly table, you're very probably going to damage that finish.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, what are the principles behind our policies? And I had also shared with you that, you know, one of the pet peeves I used to have was, and it was totally unrealistic or unreasonable, rather, I would always want to know, did people get to work before 8 o'clock? You know, were they sitting at their desk at 5 minutes till eight? Because everybody knows, you know, a good worker is a person that's always at their desk. Well, no, you could be at your desk checking social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was focusing on the outward signs, not on what was in the heart of that employee. Were they really super dedicated? Were they, you know, were they maybe working the evening before at home? Or maybe they were like at Macne, we have a lot of evening events,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if somebody's doesn't get home from that evening event till 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night, they have a very good reason for not being in the office at the strike of 8 or 8:30.
Right.
So it's, what's the principle? What are we teaching them? Here's another example. A record keeping and timekeeping for hourly employees. So a lot of companies will have, and we had them at SelfLock. We started out with paper time cards, and then we went to data collection systems.
Mm-hmm.
But if all you do is harp on the fact that people clock in and clock out and write down the raw material they used and how many parts they made, just from the sake of, this is a rule, you need to do it, but you don't tell them why it's important, you'll get data, but it'll be bad. And I really had to do a lot of teaching with my folks at SelfLock on this, where I made it very simple for the guys. I said, you know, our policy is that you need to record your production, but let me tell you why. And they felt, so long as they had data, they were following the rules. You know, they were following the minor details to a T, but missing the major point. So I said, if you record your time against the wrong job, and then I do a costing of that job, if that job had more costs than it should have, I'll raise the price because we lost money on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that you didn't record time against, I may think, wow, I've got some really big margins, and if the customer starts pushing me on price, I can lower the price on that. I said, the problem is the information I'm using isn't any good. So the principle behind the record keeping and the data collection was, I need to have accurate information so I can accurately price the product so we don't lose money on it. And once I kind of made that argument to them, they were a lot more careful,
mm-hmm.
because we taught the principle instead of just, you know, majoring on the minors.
And it probably instills additional ownership as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So people feel like that, you know, okay, what I'm doing is important. It's adding value to the organization. It's a critical step in
right.
completing my job, and not just, okay, I checked the box. Like
right.
I guessed what I did and I put it in. So I hope Dave's happy.
Exactly. And, you know, for a lot of times, I think in a lot of cases, that's really why the people did it. They didn't want to disappoint me. They wanted to make sure they did all their work before they left, but they didn't know why that was an important thing. You know, I'm thinking too, you know, sometimes we may focus on, let's say we have an event and we focus on evaluations for the events and we really harp on people, you know, please, you got to finish this before you leave. But do they know why? You know, have we made a good argument, a compelling argument that says the reason why we appreciate evaluations is we'd like to tailor these events so that they're things you really want to attend, not just decide, you know, does Dave get 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 5 on the class that he just taught?
Right.
Because you know, there's times when I get really annoyed having to fill out evaluations because I don't know what's the real reason behind it. Is it just a box we need to check, or are they going to do something with it? The other thing that I thought of, Marissa, with this majoring on the minors is micromanagers have issues with this.
Right.
Where they're so focused on how something gets done in terms of the details of, you know, did you dot every I and cross every T versus the content of what's there. There may be different ways, you know, I'm sure you see it because you're editing so many people's writings that everybody has their own writing style. And I could see a micromanager saying, no, I want you to write it this way rather than I'd like you to have some really good content.
Right.
In what you're writing. So I kind of started to think, so why do people micromanage? And so what do you think are the reasons why people micromanage?
I mean, I think there's a lot of different reasons, some of them more inner and some are more outer. So some might be specific to that person's behavioral profile, you know, their personality. They might have more of a type A control freak, perfectionist thing going on. And then I think, you know, externally, it could be maybe they don't actually trust their team.
Right.
Or I think that'd probably be the big one. They don't trust their team. I guess the most unfortunate of all would be if your team didn't, you know, completely lacked the skill, but then that's a whole separate issue that needs to be resolved.
Right. Yeah.
But I think there are probably a handful of reasons why people fall into that pattern.
Yeah. And you touched on all of them. You know, you have the ones that you just have to find a way to cope with. And that would be that I am my behavioral profile. So perhaps I'm a high C, a high compliance behavior profile. I'm very detail oriented. I focus so much on data and metrics and doing things in a specific way type of thing that your natural tendency is to over communicate and over control. The other one, as you mentioned, you know, the type A, the high D, the high dominance behavior profile kind of person that just has to have it a certain way. The only good news about that behavior profile is typically they don't pay enough attention to micromanage unless something starts to go wrong. But we as leaders, we need to be aware when we are falling into micromanagement, because I'll give a leader an excuse if it's their behavior profile. I'll say, okay, I understand you have this tendency. Now let's work on scaling that back. The problem is that it comes across to their team as that their team isn't trusted. And, you know, nobody wants to be micromanaged. And even, you know, leaders that really understand that they have a problem with micromanaging, it's tough to break it. And so for me, one of the ways I've been able to get leaders to recognize it is to say, do you realize that your team thinks you don't trust them? And then they'll say, no, I trust them implicitly. Well, then let go a little bit. Let them go. Give them the principles. Teach them the values. Because we're not always around.
Right.
And the drawback for the leader who acts more like a manager and is majoring on the minors is that when he or she is not around, the people don't know how to act. Which, I mean, if you think about it, that's really a scary thought, that my team doesn't know how to act when I'm not around. And the reason is I haven't taught them to think. I've done all the thinking for them. And I'll never forget, you know, when my kids were not little, but getting a little bit older, like in their teens and getting ready to. So if my parents were around when my kids would be going out to an event or something, I remember hearing my mom say, "Don't forget whose children you are." You know, and the neat part was she wasn't going to try to control them, but she believed that they had been taught the principles and the values and they knew how to behave.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we as leaders kind of have to think about that with our teams. You know, they know how to behave if we've given them the tools. They right. know how to work if we've given them the principles, and then we don't have to major on the minors. Because
mm-hmm.
nobody likes that.
Right.
So that's all I had on that one.
Well, I think...
moral of that's...
If you think about, like, the micromanagement side of it, too, that doesn't always feel good when you're the micromanager. Either.
No. Because I mean, you feel you need to.
Right, right. And it's a high anxiety place to live in.
Yes, it is.
You know, I remember when you first started working with us at MACNE, that was one of the things you first said to me when we started working together was that, you know, you're like, I have a hard time letting go of things. I like to control what's going
right.
on. You know, you were very upfront with me and I could tell, you know, it was something that you were working on. So that's the most encouraging part about this is if you can take the time now to say, hey, like, I think I'm identifying as someone who's majoring on the minors. You know, you don't need to say a micromanager. I mean, that's a kind of a nasty title. No one wants to feel that. But
right.
if you can say, you know, check in and if you think you identify with that, the great thing is it's you can change it. And
there's hope, right?
Yeah. And you can, you know, you work with your team and get to a place of mutual
sure.
trust and understanding the principles behind the policies.
Right.
Or the principles behind anything, whether it be the project
yeah.
or, you know, behavior, office behavior, things like that. I think it
sure.
Creates a much better environment for everyone.
So did I improve?
I think so. You weren't nearly as bad okay, as you had described yourself.
All right. Well, and I think the reality was that I just was so concerned because I know what my tendencies are.
Right.
And
you didn't know the tendencies of the people you were working with either.
Right, right. And the neat part was I started working with a team that while I knew everybody fairly well, I didn't know work habits.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up working on a team with people that really get things done, and I don't have to check up all the time,
right.
which is great.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing better than having a team that you don't have to worry about, that
mm-hmm.
you can go away and just say, yep, they're going to take care of it. I know they will.
Yeah, because we were all on the same page. We were all on the same page with the principles and with what our
right.
goals were and what, you know, what we were looking to accomplish and how we would get there.
Exactly. So for leaders, if you find yourself majoring on the minors, look in the mirror. It's not your people's fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's your fault. It's not the team's fault if the leader is majoring on the minors. It probably means that he or she hasn't given them the fundamentals of why they're doing what they're doing and why the requests have been made. Now, I guess you could have people that just don't fit the organization and then
mm-hmm.
you have to kind of coach them to find a job somewhere else.
Right.
But for the most part, you can find the problem if you look in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
So, don't major on the minors. It's okay once in a while if the kids talk with food in their mouth.
Yes.
Because they will grow up to be good people that know how to act and do the right things in public. And they won't embarrass us too badly. And it probably is, you know, my mother probably would have said something like, you know, I always prayed that you'd have one just like you.
Yeah, right.
So... I think every parent has whispered that prayer once or twice in their
yes.
life when their kids were little.
Absolutely.
So do you want to know what we're talking about next week?
Yes, of course.
Navigation.
Navigation. I have a feeling that's one of your
favorite
topics.
Exactly. You knew it'd have to have something to do with boats. And so
mm-hmm.
we're gonna delve into that one, and I'm gonna share some true life experiences of having issues running aground.
Perfect. So, right on time with the boat show.
We are, yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, by the time our listeners listen to this, it's going to be past.
Yes.
But, oh, well. Next year. For next year, mark your calendars. The last full weekend in July is the Antique Boat Show in Skinny Alice.
And it is a lot of fun.
It is. So with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.